Each week at this time, Information Please is presented by H.J. Hines Company, makers of the famous 57 varieties. Four experts will try to answer your questions if you'll send them to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York 22, New York. We may edit them mildly, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment of who shall be paid. If we use your question, the H.J. Hines Company will send you $10 in war stamps and a copy of the Encyclopedia Britannica World Atlas. If we slip up on it, you get $57 in war bonds and stamps and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And don't forget that if the experts should miss all three parts of the question you get, in addition to the encyclopedia, a $500 war bond instead of the usual $57. All questions remain our property. Information Please is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaul. And now, our master of ceremonies, Clifton Fadiman.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Information Please, traveling along its customary happy-go-lucky path, comes up with our four-man panel tonight. Our experts consist of our two tried-and-true veterans, Mr. John Kieran, columnist of the New York Sun, and Mr. Franklin P. Adams, author of Nods and Becks, which is published today. How's it making out, Frank?
Can't tell you.
All right, no landslide. Our guests this evening are the distinguished pianist, Mr. Arthur Rubinstein, whose first New York concert of the season is at Carnegie Hall this coming Sunday evening, and the well-known author and lecturer, Mr. Lewis Brown. We're going to begin, gentlemen, with a question from Mrs. Robert Quinn of Rochester, New York. Get two out of three. In what city or country would a G.I. find himself if he had these native drinks? Coffee with whipped cream. Where would he be likely to be, Mr. Brown?
Germany or Austria.
Yes, which more probably?
Laxane. Well, Austria.
Probably, yes, and what city is famous for it?
Vienna.
Vienna. Mr. Rubinstein, do you remember?
Vienna. Vienna.
Schlagobel. Yes.
Ungekehrten.
Awfully good, and one of Austria's better products, do we say. Now, suppose the GI ordered and got a mixture of black currant cordial and vermouth. Where would he be more apt to be, Mr. Adams?
He would be apt to be in France.
Yes.
And that would be called a pompier.
Would it really?
Yes.
Oh, the pompier was a fireman.
It is. And that is what is called a pompier, that drink with seltzer in it.
Mr. Kieran, do you remember that from your days back in the old...
We don't call it a pompier.
I guess over here we've just called it a vermouth cassis, I
that's
think.
That's right.
That
vermouth cassis.
That's what they used to call it at Moquin's.
Okay, all right. In any case, you'd get it in Paris or in the south of France. It's kind of a specialty. Suppose you were having coffee soda with chocolate ice cream. Where, what country would it be apt to be, Mr. Rubinstein?
America.
Yes, what part would you say?
I think all of the country.
All
the drugstores in the world.
What's that particular mixture called? Coffee soda with chocolate ice cream.
Broadway. Never had it. I never had it, no. I looked always with dismay at people drinking it.
Adam, do you think it's a good drink to recommend to the...
I think it's wonderful. Wish I had one right now.
Well, our sponsor does not happen to deal in Broadway sodas. That gives us three out of three. How about Mr. J.W. Ritchie's question? This comes from Cincinnati, Ohio. Get two out of three. Identify the real or imaginary person from whose names these words derive. And tell how the word is derived from their names. Here, the first word is tantalize. Tantalize. Mr. Kieran.
Derived from the Greek mythological character Tantalus, who I believe was up to his chin in water and very thirsty, and he was held that way, and every time he bent down or tried to bend down and take a drink, the water lowered itself automatically, and it was a rather tantalizing situation for him.
Well, he didn't know that until the etymologist made up
that's
the word.
Right.
Yes, that's right. We get a word, Tantalus, another word from Tantalus. The word itself, Tantalus, means what? Have any of you come across it in reading English novels, Mr. Brown?
No, there's a hill, there's a Mount Tantalus in Hawaii, in right outside of Honolulu.
I doubt that comes from, maybe it does come from the old story. Well, what we call a soda water siphon is in England, I think, called a Tantalus, isn't it? Have you ever come across that?
Oh, no, that's something, that's where you put a lock on a liquor container. That's called a Tantalus.
That's right.
So you can see it, but you can't get
it.
Can't get it.
Well, I knew it was had something to do with liquor. Yeah. Now, the word dunce, which we constantly use, though never on this program. Mr. Brown?
The famous Duns Scotus, who was a medieval scholastic, early 13th century, late 12th actually, was born, who, because of his reputation for scholarship and for learning had a great following who were opposed by the Thomists later, and these followers of Duns Scotus were called the Dunces, because they were looked upon with a certain amount of contempt by these other people.
Yes, that's a perfect answer. Very good. How about the word Nimrod? We constantly use that word. Mr. Rubenstein.
Nimrod?
Mm-hmm.
Is the great traveler.
Now you got the wrong man.
Oh, then I retire. I retire.
No, no, come back again. Mr. Kieran.
A great hunter before the Lord.
Yes.
In the Bible.
Yes, I think mighty, isn't it? In
mighty hunter.
And so we use the word Nimrod of any hunter now. What one were you thinking of? Gulliver?
I was thinking of a traveler.
Jonah?
Not Gulliver. No. I'll get to him.
There are a lot of travelers in the old
country, remind
but
you.
I think Nimrod, not one of them. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. Try this one from Herbert Briskman in New York City. A musical question, gentlemen. Get 2 out of 3. What royal house or family is suggested by each of these musical excerpts? Is that clear? Let's have the first. Now, gentlemen, that's a familiar excerpt. Mr. Rubenstein is familiar to you, of course.
The English royal family.
Why would you say that? What was being played?
Piece?
What was being played?
I thought this is a Handel piece, is it?
No. Mr. Brown?
Sounds like Bach to me.
Bach is right.
Mm-hmm. It is Bach.
Yes, it is Bach. Now, Mr. Adams.
He had a royal family of his own.
What of Bach was being played, Mr. Adams? You're doing
good. I have no idea. I just know it was Bach.
You're disappointed. Mr. Brown?
No, I'm lost.
Well, it's one of the Brandenburg Concerti. Is that, oh,
well,
is that right? Mr.
Rubenstein? I thought it was a Handel.
And so it would be the house of Brandenburg. Quite right. You almost came to the rescue, Mr. Adams, but not perfect.
It wasn't a royal house.
Though. Well, no. I would perhaps say a, what shall we say?
Grand Duchy.
Grand Duchy. Yes, all right. Yes. Now the second one.
Easy.
That's an easy one, Mr.
Rosenberg.
What is that?
This is the Austrian Empire.
Yes.
The Emperor of Austria. Franz Joseph.
Yes, so the famous house of...
Strauss, yes, yes.
The Habsburg house. And what was being played?
The Strauss Waltz.
Which one? There are only, I think...
They're all having more or less the same names, you know. Beautiful Forest of Vienna, the Blue Danube, and...
They seem to me to have more
love,
of the same melodies,
love, wine, and...
Mr. Kieran?
Isn't that part of the Emperor Waltz?
That's right, that's
right. Called Emperor Waltz?
The Emperor Waltz, yes.
Only in English.
You stick around here, Mr. Rubenstein, you'll learn something about me.
I will learn something about music, yes.
You listen to Kieran and Adams, you get a liberal education.
I never knew the names of waltzes. But I know the waltzes, all right.
I'm sure you do. Yes, that, and of course that's the house of Habsburg. And now the third, Mr. Khan. Mr. Brown?
The house of Romanoff.
You couldn't be wronger, it seems to me. What's being played? Mr. Rubenstein?
This is the Elgar piece.
Yes, that's right.
Which is written, also for the English house.
Yes,
royal
pomp and circumstance.
Pomp and circumstance, as Mr.
Awful.
Adams reminded
me. That was awful.
What made you think of Romanoff, Mr. Brown?
I don't know. Pomp and circumstance suggested Romanoff.
Haven't you heard it at Mike Romanoff?
That's exactly what I think of.
Well, that gives us 2 wrong out of 3. That's Heinz 57 sends $57 in war bonds and stamps from Briskman and a set of the Britannica. How about this one, gentlemen, from Mrs. H.M. Wadsworth of New Orleans? Let's get all on this. This is not a hard question. This is about nudes. Paintings of nudes, Mr. Adams. Can you identify the famous paintings of nudes from these brief descriptions?
Nudes or nudes?
Nudes. N-U-D-E-S. Nudes. You still don't understand?
We know
nudes. Nudes.
No, nudes is good nudes.
Yes, that's... The first painting shows a young woman supporting a water jar on her shoulder. It's a famous painting. Painting of what, Mr. Rubenstein?
Greuze, I think.
Greuze, I don't think. You know, I... There is. I know
he's
what you're
of
thinking
Greer.
Of. Yes, you're thinking of the broken vase.
The broken vase of Greer, which
yes.
A young nude woman.
You know, I thought...
Isn't that a bougaro that...
I don't think she's nude, Mr. Sorry to disappoint you, Mr. Rubenstein.
Well, I always saw her nude.
Oh, that's right. If you mustn't, you... Mr. Adams?
That might be Rebecca at the well.
No.
Not nude.
Miss Brown?
I thought it was a bougaro.
Well, almost any bougaro is a nude, but I don't think that he has a picture of a woman supporting a water jar on her shoulder. That is La Source by Ingres. I-N-G-R-E-S, and it can be found in the Louvre unless the Germans have looted it. La Source of Ingres. Now we have to get the next two right. We have to get all right, as a matter of fact. Now, another famous picture shows a nude standing on a large seashell. Who is that? What is that? Mr. Kieran?
Correggio. The one that was in here at the World's Fair. It's that big Venus.
Yes.
And it shows her in a shell, and
right.
It's a crack right across the middle of the picture.
Yeah.
Now, wait a minute, isn't it correct, Jill?
You've got it, Mr.
Yeah,
Kieran.
I know the picture very sure. well, and there's Triton blowing out of a horn in there.
Yeah. Now, Mr. Rubenstein, give him the name of the painter.
Botticelli.
Botticelli.
Right, yeah. There are three other figures in the picture. Oh, you got that, John, except correct you instead of Botticelli.
Sure.
Now, how about a reclining nude wearing a ribbon around her throat and a flower in her hair? A famous painting. Mr. Rubenstein again.
It is Manet.
Manet is right.
Hollande,
yes. That's quite right. And that, too, is to be found in the Louvre. We only got one correct out of that. Heinz 57 sends $57 in war bonds and stamps for Mrs. Wadsworth and a set of the Britannica. And now, here's our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer, who believes the sweetest flower that grows is one you can eat.
Many years ago, it was considered the most gallant gesture for a gentleman to proffer his lady love a tomato plant. Well, since then, tomatoes have grown in favor and flavor. And while we don't send the girls tomato plants, love apples they called them then, I'll wager that plenty of romances have bloomed over two fragrant plates of Heinz cream of tomato soup. But there's a soup that goes right to the heart of a hungry man. It's condensed, you know. You just add an equal quantity of water or milk. Heinz cream of tomato soup is a picture of goodness, rosy and shining, just like the fresh, vine-ripe tomatoes it's made from. Add to the tang of luscious tomatoes the rich, mellow blessing of cream, the subtle excitement of spice, all perfectly blended, and you have a good idea of what Heinz condensed cream of tomato soup is like. Get one whiff of its teasing fragrance, a taste of its old-fashioned flavor, and you'll say, orchids to Heinz cream of tomato soup, or more likely, please, may I have a little more?
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Now, gentlemen, try this one from Mary Ann Bodine of Kansas City, Missouri. Let's get 2 out of 3. In what famous poems do we find female characters whose singing affected people in the following ways? Well, in the first case, some people forgot to watch out for reefs as a result of listening to people singing. Mr. Kieran.
Well, those are the sirens, in the Greek mythology.
Watch
and also the Lorelei.
Which one do you choose? Choose 1 out of 2, those two. Those are 2 answers. Which do you choose, Mr. Garrett?
Well, I'll take the sirens for the reefs.
No, I think not. Mr. Brown?
The Lorelei.
The Lorelei, yeah.
Where are the Lorelei?
On the Rhine, it's only one.
On the Rhine.
You have reefs in a river like the Rhine, is that what
He's
you
right.
call them? Reefs?
I guess they must be reefs. What would
I
you call them?
I have reefs in the sea.
Is it a poem of Heine by the Lorelei?
Yes, but is the word, what Mr. Kieran wants to know, is whether the word reef, whether in...
I'm afraid Mr. Kieran is right.
Yeah, I think he's right, too.
You'd have coral reefs in the ocean, but you wouldn't have a reef in a river.
You might have shallows or something of that sort.
Yeah, right. Rock, but you don't have a reef. It's a rock barrier.
I don't know what a reef is.
You don't know what a reef is?
Underneath
the... Well, how about this
reef
one?
Is what you have at a funeral when you send it... Well, somebody's got to take Oscar Levant's place, isn't
there? No, not necessarily. They are so enchanted, these other people listening to someone singing, that everything else is forgotten. Now I think Mr. Kieran's original answer, Mr. Kieran.
Well, the sirens would do there too, but I still think they lured a lot of people to their death before Ulysses went by with his sailors with the ears stuffed with wax and himself lashed to the mast so that he wouldn't be wrecked there.
No, but other sailors were. But we don't know whether they were wrecked on reefs or not. The Odyssey isn't clear on that point. Now, in this They listen to someone singing, these other people, and as a result become better men. Where does that occur, Mr. Brown?
Well, I think of the Salvation Army.
That might very well be true. Might very well be true. I was thinking rather of a literary reference, Mr. Rubenstein.
I thought of Orpheus.
Where?
Of Orpheus.
Now you have me there. Does someone become a better man through listening to the piping?
Well, you're supposed to influence all animals.
Yes, but not to become
after all,
better.
All we are animals, aren't we?
Don't look at me. Don't look at me, Mr. Rubenstein. Down at Kieran?
Well, I think Mr. Rubenstein is correct to the extent that Orpheus' singing drew iron tears down Pluto's cheek. But what I would mention would be Pippa in Browning's poem, Pippa Passes.
Yeah, please tell us about that, Kieran.
Well, she goes through the play and she gives Pippa passes occasionally and sings little verses as she goes through, and it sort of cheers up everybody.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. It may be that Orpheus improved people, too, but I think he made them happier rather than better. A subtle distinction, Mr. Rubenstein. That we got at least 2 out of 3 on that, though I'm still a little puzzled about the reefs. Mr. Adams?
I think the Piper of Hamelin made the kids better.
He did?
Sure.
What? Why, it seems to me that...
He was drats only, I think, you didn't he?
No.
Oh. Made the children very happy. Yes, but didn't they disappear into the cavern with him at the end?
Yeah, but they were happy while they were listening to the music.
True, true. You do look on the best side of things. Mr. Kieran?
That's terrible. That was the biggest case of mass kid kidnapping on record.
Difference of opinion, apparently. How about this one from Laura Gantz of New York? What military figure dominated the world from the Dnieper River to the China Sea? Now, think a moment, gentlemen. Mr. Kieran?
Genghis Khan.
That's quite right. Didn't have to think a moment. When did Genghis Khan live? Drat him. About what century, would you say?
I don't know, about the...
Pick a century. Mr. Brown?
1514-16. How's that?
I think that's wrong, unless the typist has made a few mistakes here. I have 1162 to 1227. That sounds awfully definite on this card. How about a military figure who dominated the world from the Bay of Biscay to the Volga River? Be careful on this. Think it through. The Bay of Biscay to the Volga River. Mr. Rubenstein?
Napoleon.
I think you'd be wrong there. Mr. Kieran?
Well, I would say at the height of his power, one of the Roman emperors. Julius Caesar, for instance.
I think never as far as to the Volga. Would you say...
Well, he said his famous, I came, I saw, I conquered from way out in Asia Minor.
Yes, but not to the Volga River. He might have been down there somewhere in Asia Minor. Gentlemen, you seem to have forgotten that a soon-to-be-forgotten figure named Hitler in 1942 dominated Europe from the Bay of Biscay to the Volga River.
Well, that's archaeology. It's in history.
Soon it will be archaeology, but it is still history. Now, who dominated...
But he never dominated, though. Let's be frank.
Are you telling me something?
Yes, he never dominated.
Well, he was master of all of Europe, almost all of Europe, for a short time, I think.
Pretending, just showing up.
That may be so. How about one who dominated the world from the Straits of Gibraltar to the Beresina? The Straits of Gibraltar, the Beresina, Mr. Rubenstein.
That was Napoleon.
That was Napoleon in what year, would you say?
1812.
In 1812,
oh,
yes. Well, you'd think these conquerors would learn, but they never seem to. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. Here's one for Mrs. Mary Goldstein of this city, and get 2 out of 3 on this, too. This is all about people who worked with lenses. Now, this one had to grind lenses to earn a living so that he could write his philosophical works. Mr. Brown, who was
Spinoza, there? Benedict Spinoza, 1632.
Yes. Born 1632? Yeah. You love dates. When did he die?
He was 40, he was in his early 40s.
Dying.
Oh, no, I read A Life of a Man, so I don't know.
You should know.
Yeah.
He died in 1677.
Yeah,
according to our most recent information. He is said to have used a great lens to destroy an enemy fleet. Who was that? Miss Kieran.
Archimedes.
That's quite right, Miss Kieran. What famous battle was it?
Oh, Syracuse.
Syracuse, right. Shall we ask Mr. Brown the date?
I think you'd better ask him, because I don't remember offhand, but it was about 2 or 3 centuries B.C., I think.
Quite good enough, 212 B.C.
Not bad.
Very good. Now, this man was a printer, among other things, and invented bifocal lenses. Mr. Adams.
Benjamin Franklin.
Benjamin Franklin. Not very many people perhaps know that he was the inventor of bifocals. An ingenious fellow. Try this one from Josephine Howe of Riverside, California. Again, get 2 out of 3. Can you identify these European rulers of the 19th and 20th centuries, in some cases, if I give you their wives' names? This one married Princess Elena of Montenegro on October 24th, 1896. Who's that? Mr. Rubenstein.
Vittorio Emanuele, the third.
Yes. Is he still reigning?
Unfortunately.
Yes, he's still, unfortunately, the King of Italy. He's not working at it, but he is the King of Italy. Now, this one married Princess Augusta Victoria of Augustenberg on February 27th, 1881. Who did that? Mr. Rubenstein again.
William II of Germany.
William II of Germany, yes. You're a regular court calendar, Mr. Rubenstein.
I am particularly interested.
You love these things?
The court. Yes, I do.
All right, see what you can do on this one then. This European ruler married Princess Alix, A-L-I-X, of Hesse, on November 26, 1894. Mr. Rubenstein again.
Nicolas II of Russia.
Now, why don't the rest of you know these things? Wait. Now, here's a question.
When they didn't marry, perhaps some of these men could be more experts.
That might be so. We'll try that next time. Now, here's a question made for our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer. Can you name two instances in literature where earthly foods are described as possessing heavenly virtues?
Well, a certain clam soup was referred to as food for the gods in the poetry of W.A. Crawford, and Nero, as I recall, gave mushrooms the same benediction. But I'd rather use homelier terms to describe the everyday satisfying joys of Heinz real cream of tomato soup. It has a certain homespun, old-fashioned goodness that makes you want it again and again. And yet, that combination of flavors, rich cream and fresh vine-ripened tomatoes, tied together with a fragrant bouquet of spice, is always new, always intriguing to taste. And it's condensed, you know. You just add an equal quantity of milk or water. There's an art to making a perfect soup like Heinz condensed cream of tomato. The tomatoes, for one thing, must be full red ripe, heavy with juice, and picked at their peak of flavor. The cream must be rich and thick and plentiful. And the seasoning, well, you have to know your spices to pick up and accent the flavor, the way it's accented in Heinz cream of tomato soup. You know, I think now I could go nearer one better and say, a dish envied by the gods, Heinz cream of tomato soup.
Thank you, Mr. Grauer. Gentlemen, how about this one from Elizabeth McMicken of Seattle, Washington? Get 2 out of 3. Identify these characters of fiction, all of whom have gotten somewhat the same kind of position. This prince finds himself a juryman trying the girl he has wronged. Mr. Kieran.
That's in Crime and Punishment, I believe. A Russian novel.
It's in a Russian novel, all right, Mr. Kieran, but I think you got the wrong novel. Mr. Rubenstein.
Resurrection of Tolstoy.
That's right, yes. Remember the name of the prince? No, it doesn't sound like that.
Karina is the woman.
Pardon?
Karina is the woman.
Nekhludov.
Nekhludov is the prince.
Well, you pronounce it better, but we have the same
prince. It's not nice name, really.
Nekhludov, yes. He's a member of the jury that tries Katerina Maslova. Now, Mr. Kieran, I, you may be right, but it seems...
All those Russian novels seem the same to me. I can't keep them separate.
Can't keep one separate from the other? How about this one? This king finds himself the judge in a case in which his wife is the victim of a theft. His wife is the victim of a theft, and he finds himself the judge in the case. A serious situation. Mr. Kieran.
Well, that was when the knave of hearts stole a tart.
Yes, that's right. Where would you find it?
Through the looking glass, isn't it?
In Alice in Wonderland.
Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, that's very good. That's picking it out. How about a case in which this judge condemns his 2 sons to death for treason? Well, this might be historical mythology or legendary history, shall we say. A judge condemning his 2 sons to death for treason. What case is that? It comes from Roman history, early Roman history. Junius Brutus condemns his sons because they joined a conspiracy, remember, to restore the banished Tarquin to the throne of Rome.
Mm-hmm.
Does that come back to you, Mr. Kieran? Mm-hmm. Comes back to all 4 of you, apparently. We got 2 out of 3 on that. Try this one now. From Mr. G.P. Miller of Denver. Can you identify these anthropoids? You all know what an anthropoid is?
Mm-hmm.
The first is the mad monk. Mr. Adams. Mr. Kieran.
Well, that would be either Iliodora or Rasputin, whichever one you were voting for at the time.
Iliodora was... No politics, please.
Better known as the mad monk, I think.
Yes. Or Rasputin, the confidant of the Tsarina, the wife who was the wife of Nicholas II. How about King Kong Keller? Famous anthropoid, King Kong Keller, Mr. Kieran.
Why, that was the great outfielder of the New York Yankees until he went into the Merchant Marine, I think he's in now. Perhaps it's the Coast Guard.
Yes, it's the Navy, I think.
Navy? Well, he's in some service.
Yes, and was he christened King Kong?
No, he's just a strong chap, that's all. He's nothing like a gorilla. He's a very fine gentleman.
Charlie, you're not being very nice to the gorillas when you say that, however. Yeah. What were his first names? What are his first names?
Charles Keller.
Charles Keller. And his middle name?
That I don't know.
Charles Ernest Keller. I'm surprised at all of you.
Charles Ernest Keller.
Now, the third anthropoid, gentlemen, is Ape Neck Sweeney. Who is he? Ape Neck Sweeney. Ever hear of him?
Must be a wrestler.
I don't know what his job is, but he's a character in T.S. Eliot's Sweeney Among the Nightingales, a famous modern poem. Those two lines that I recollect are, Ape Neck Sweeney spreads his knees, letting his arms hang down to laugh. That gives us two out of three. Now try this one from James E. Took of Fayetteville, New York. In what poems will you find these phrases all about glory? The first is, a glory from the earth. A glory from the earth. Mr. Kieran.
That is from Wordsworth's poem, which has the longest title I ever met in poetry, Ode on Intimations of Immortality from Recollections of Earliest Childhood. For there has passed away a glory from the earth.
That's perfectly right. That's picking it out. Now how about A Sea of Glory, S-E-A, a sea. Mr. Kieran.
That is from Henry VIII, that is Wolsey, swam in a sea of glory and so forth and so on, addressed to Cromwell.
That's perfect. Mr. Kieran, Mr. Adams, are you going to give us...
Exactly that.
I'm sure you are. And finally, the paths of glory you would find where? The paths of glory, Mr. Adams?
That is from Gray's Elegy Written in a Country Churchyard.
Yes, and where?
Lead But to the Grave.
Lead But to the Grave, and that gives us three glories out of three, and that's all we'll have time for. Thank you, Mr. Rubenstein and Mr. Brown, for adding to the fun on Information Please this evening. Tonight, Heinz 57 has paid out $114 in war bonds and stamps and two sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Next week, we're going to have something in the way of an evening of science, at least in part. In addition to Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams, our guests will be two men distinguished in the field of science. First, the author of the new book, Men of Science in America, Mr. Bernard Jaffe, and second, the outstanding ornithologist, chairman of the Department of Birds of the American Museum of Natural History, Dr. Robert Cushman Murphy. Remember, send your questions and the correct answers to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York, 22, New York. And now our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer, has something to say about Heinz products, and then we'll give you the news headlines of the moment.
Any epicure can tell you that flavor, fine flavor, is what changes mere food into a delight. That is why Heinz condiments like Heinz mustard, 57 sauce, and ketchup are more important today than ever before, for they put the joy of eating in our plain wartime meals. Here are the latest headlines from the NBC newsroom. American troops have advanced another 2 miles in the Philippines. The Russians have driven into East Prussia 14 miles on an 88-mile front. On the Western Front, German troops have driven the Canadians out of Breskens, important bastion in Holland, which the Canadians had captured yesterday. Now, until next Monday night at the same time, H.J. Hines Company wishes you good health and good evening.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.